This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Is it better to max out your 401k or put more in a brokerage account? Does buying a home make financial sense in today's market? Should you use extra cash to pay off debt or invest? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing and budgeting strategies to help you build wealth and navigate major financial decisions. Make smarter money moves. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
The New York Knicks win again. In improbable fashion, have a 2-0 lead on the Boston Celtics. And what we saw last night, so improbable, so unlikely, so crazy. I didn't think that we would ever see a game like we saw in game one where the Knicks are down 20 and then come back and we've got these unbelievable defensive plays at the end of the game. It was a carbon copy of game one. I didn't think that was possible. As the Knicks fight back, they look like they're dead. The Boston Celtics go completely cold. The Knicks make the best plays, the necessary plays at the end of the game, and they have the most unlikely, crazy 2-0 lead I think I've ever seen in a playoff series with one of my teams in my lifetime. This is nuts. Now they got to finish it off. They're coming back to the Garden on Saturday. Of all the outcomes that I expected in this series, what we've seen so far would have been at the bottom of the list. Amazing stuff last night. Good morning, Boomer. How are you?
I'm like, wait, what just happened? I mean, I can't believe that this game unfolded the way it did. And honestly, for those people who do love and eat, sleep, and drink the NBA, they see a lot of this. These comebacks are amazing. The first time in consecutive games in playoff history that a team has come back from 20 points down to win a game. And I'm just thinking to myself, first of all, Mikal Bridges was playing defense like his ass off the whole game, and then all of a sudden turns it on offensively in the fourth quarter, which is amazing. So it goes to show you, it's not how you start, because I think they only had 13 points in the first quarter. It's how you finish, and they finished with a flurry in the fourth quarter, and Mikal Bridges was the impetus to that on offense and defense. But there were a couple things that happened in this game that were just amazing as they started to unfold, because everybody wanted Cat to do more. We need to get him more involved. And he was a dominating force in the first half of this game, and they got him the ball, and it was great. As you said, it was great that the Boston Celtics went cold again, 25% from 3-point. It's insane that this is one of the best three-point shooting teams. And they're shooting this poorly in these first two games, which is great. And hopefully it continues at Madison Square Garden. But you think about a couple things that happened here. Mikal Bridges went off for 14 points in the fourth quarter. Karl Anthony Towns has a really key tip-in and a foul for a three-point play. And then from that point on, Brunson takes over. And he scores six straight points for the Knicks, and the final 6 points for the Knicks. And then, of course, Mikal Bridges makes the steal, or the great block and steal at the end of the game. This really reminded me of the 93-94 Knicks playoff run. And the reason I say that is because that year the Knicks played 25 playoff games. They swept the Nets, and then they had to go to three series, all seven games. Do you know how many games that they had where they scored over 100 points in those 25 playoff games?
And probably not a lot. Yeah.
Three.
Yeah.
Every single game was like just beating each other up hard. Yeah, and think about some of the players they played against.
Oh, yeah.
And some of the players that they had on their own team. And this is exactly what this felt like last night. I mean, I felt like I was watching the 94 Knicks again. That playoffs where it was just coming down to the wire. Who's going to make the play? Who's going to get the turnover? Who's going to hit the big shot? And I have to say, it was... I mean, when the game was over, I was like, I cannot believe that they won that game.
Yeah, I mean, as it was going down to the wire, and of course the Celtics have the last possession, I'm like, God, how devastating would this be to come all the way back and lose, which is the same feeling that I had in game one, and the fact that they suffocate him on defense. And by the way, you know, Mikal Bridges is going to be the story defensively, but Mitchell Robinson on Jason Tatum to force him into that horrible shot pass, whatever he was thinking there, is something that I think went unnoticed after the game, because, you know, he could have gotten worked in that situation.
That was a great switch, actually.
Yeah, I mean, and it ended up working out. I'm sure Jason Tatum was like, hell, I'll just be able to get right around Mitchell Robinson, and his agility in that situation was great. But the way you mentioned the, you know, in the beginning, it's Karl Anthony Towns. In the middle, it's Jalen Brunson. At the end, it's Mikal Bridges. And that's what it's going to take with all this talent on this team to keep this run going.
And not to forget about Mitchell Robinson.
Of course,
Or OG Anunoby.
Everybody contributed.
Or Josh Hart, who continues, you know, he and Mikal Bridges played the most minutes last night. Again, they're just like Energizer bunnies. They just don't stop. So... They got something special going on right now. It's obvious to everybody who's watching this. And on the other side, the Boston Celtics, you know, their best players are basically not playing well at all. I mean, their offensive output is just like...
I mean, Jason Tatum...
Are we watching $500 million worth of players? What are we watching?
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, this is a team that obviously was put together and it worked last year. They won a championship, and Jason Tatum's one of the most aesthetically pleasing players to watch in the NBA when he's going right. But, I mean, the amount of missed shots that this guy had. I mean, in the fourth quarter, when he had the ball in his hands, I was happy. I was like, he's going to miss another shot. I mean, it's absolutely incredible. And Jaylen Brown got off to a great start. Porzingis still wasn't right. You could tell he had a couple of key plays, but the guy was not himself, which is a major factor in this thing.
But so he had points in this game. The only other thing I would say is that every starting player for the Knicks was a minus for this game. Mitchell Robinson was like a plus 18.
Yeah.
Not to go unnoticed either is the substitution pattern that Tom Thibodeau was using at the end of this game to force fouls and taking Mitchell Robinson off the court.
Kept Mitchell Robinson in when they made that foul. OG comes in for Mitch. Yeah,
those are little things that Tom Thibodeau controls, and things worked out where he could do that, and he did it, and he did it successfully. But I mean, the shooting problems for Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, just hopefully they continue. And then just these hustle plays by the Knicks and the defense by the Knicks, and the fact that you held Boston under 100 points, you held 90 points. I mean, it's mind-boggling in today's NBA that team with those players, you know, are being held to that many points. The only other thing I would say is that the bench for the Knicks was outscored again. Significantly by the bench of the Boston Celtics. But say what you want. I mean, the fact that you can hold the Celtics to 90 points and beat them, that's
amazing. I mean, and a lot of it is the Knicks defense and how well they played, and a lot of it's the fact that this team just doesn't normally shoot like this. I mean, and it is great to see. I'm glad it's happening now. And there has to be some serious doubt with the Celtics, even with a team that ended up winning a championship last year. The fact that twice in a row in their home building, they blew 20-point leads to this team, and Jalen Brunson and Mikal Bridges are making the plays at the end of the game, the championship plays at the end of the game, and they're not. I mean, I can't imagine, you know, what Joe Mazzulla, Jason Tatum, Jalen Brown, all these guys, Derek White are thinking. I mean, they definitely have the championship DNA, the things that we talk about, they got it done. But, I mean, this is a major double punch in the face. And this is not your normal NBA. I mean, like, when you talk about, like, big runs and big leads and things being coughed up and the NBA being a game of runs, sure. But what happened in these two games? on the road against the defending champs, 20-point leads late in the game. And it wasn't even just like everybody will talk about the 20-point lead because that was the biggest. But like when you're down 16 with 7.5 minutes to go.
Chip away. And you got to hope that the Celtics miss open shots. And again, last night, how many uncontested shots did they miss?
A ton.
I mean, that when I say uncontested, it means there's no Nick within 5 feet of the Celtic player that's shooting. So we always say it, we make fun of it, and we call it a make or miss league, and that's exactly what this is. And the way that Jalen Brunson goes to the hoop late in this game and gets fouls and gets layups and takes control of the game, that's the point guard that every single Nick fan has been praying for. And, you know, like I said, we haven't had one since Walt Frazier that has commanded the game and controlled the game the way he has. And when he needs something, he goes and gets it, man.
Trip Taco just $2.99. Comes with a big queue. This deal's so fine. Brisket breakfast, so much to choose for $2.99. You really can't lose. Taco to go. Taco to. This deal legit. Taco to go. Taco. Only at Quick Trip. Taco to go. Taco to go. Taco to go. $2.99.
I heard a semantics conversation between C-Mac and a caller this morning about must win and what a must win means, and how the caller said game three is a must win and C-Mac said it can't be a must win if the series isn't over. And the guy said, well, series could be over if they lose, because then it gives the Celtics confidence to come back in the series. But if you do win, then the series definitely is over. And I understand it's not a technical must win, but If the Knicks do win this game, one thing I'm confident in, as wacky as this series is, that they're not losing four in a row. There's no way they're losing four in a row. It hasn't happened in the NBA, right? I know it's happened in the NHL. It hasn't happened in the NBA, a team being down 3-0, coming back and winning four straight.
I don't believe so.
Yeah, so from that standpoint, you want to say must win to move on to the next round? It's about as close to a lock as you can get. Now, if you lose it, it doesn't mean you're going to lose the series. So it's like a half of a must win. Like, if you win, well, you feel pretty good about moving on. If you lose, you still have an opportunity to win.
You know, did you think that the Celtics would lose three in a row to the Knicks? Did you think they'd lose both games at home? So who knows what happens? Shaquille O'Neal is on the side of the caller who called this, I believe it was Shaq, that called this a must win for the Knicks if they want to advance, because he believes the same thing, that if you give the Celtics life, that they might become the Celtics again. That having been said, to me, split these two. Like, if you're the Knicks, if you end up going back to Boston up 3-1 where you know you can win, you give yourself two serious cracks at ending it before game seven.
Yeah, I mean, and then the Celtics would have to win three in a row. So as hard as four in a row is, three in a row is almost as hard. So yeah, I mean, if you win one of the two, especially if you win this one, I mean, you feel even better about it. But it's they're still an underdog. It is unbelievable. They are still an underdog, and they won't be if they win game three. I think finally everybody will say that they'll be the favorite to win the series. But it's the way the games have gone.
Yeah,
I mean, we forget, because of these great comebacks and how special it's been, that the Knicks were getting killed in both of these games.
But they won the games. And I know, again, I will say it over and over, I know a big part of this has been Boston shooting for sure, but you also got to give the Knicks credit defensively for what they have done in these fourth quarters. They have made, while yes, they have been ice cold shooting the basketball, there's no question about it, they've also made big stops when the game was on the line where they very easily could have lost. So it's been maybe a perfect storm for the Knicks in these fourth quarters, I suppose. Maybe Boston's just gotten complacent with these big leads. I don't know. What I do know, though, is they're up 2-0. They are coming home where they haven't been great so far in the postseason against Detroit, with an opportunity to really put their foot on the Celtics' throat.
And if you're just tuning in, putting on the TV, or watching us a clip on X or Instagram, and you're wondering why Jerry's wearing the Kristaps Porzingis jersey, well, it is, it's simple. We asked for a jersey from Fanatics, which they delivered. We wanted to put it in the freezer. However, after the first two games, we felt like this Kristaps Porzingis jersey going in the freezer would not help the team because they won the first two games. So I said to Jerry, do you want to put this thing on? At first he said no, and then I said, how about all the times Boomer has sat there and crapped on the Nets, and I dressed up as a leprechaun
to watch the Celtics, or because I wanted the Celtics to beat the Nets. And this is an opportunity for you to stick it to us, and especially stick it to Boomer, who's not here.
You talked me into it.
And you could wear the Porzingis jersey, who he didn't like either when he was a Knick, in his chair on a Feel Good Friday. And you put that thing on,
you
rocket it proudly. So it's not was not really Jerry's decision at first. I did talk him into it, but he wasn't doing this. If the jersey wasn't in front of me this morning, it's not like Jerry himself went out and got the jersey.
Not at all. So, and I declined the leprechaun outfit from Evan. And also, in fairness, when you look at the teams that I do like, as much as I do watch the Nets. I don't watch every game. Like, you know, the Cowboys, I don't miss a play.
Right.
You know, whether it's the baseball with the Mets, even the Yankees, I'm not putting a Red Sox jersey on or, this is fine.
It's okay.
And you got to me. You got to me with Boomer needling me to a point where I'm ready to knock him in the head with a baseball bat.
And there's and he's going to see this at some point. He's going to put on CBS Sports Network or he's going to watch one of the clips that put out there and it's going to piss him off.
Yeah, in his chair.
Yeah, in his chair.
Your chair, Boomer.
Did you like the pick and trade, by the way, for the Cowboys?
I do like the pick and trade. When you look at what this team can be on paper. Now, I still don't know, you know, running back-wise, that to me is still, they drafted a kid. I don't know what that is yet. We'll see. But when you look at... I think they got a good tight end. You had CeeDee Lamb. I liked when they had Brandon Cooks last year. I thought he was going to be an X factor for him. He was okay. Never really turned out to be what I think they envisioned. But I do think when you now have two fantastic wide receivers, and I believe motivated too, it just gives Dak Prescott every resource he needs. You know, offensively, they drafted an offensive lineman. I know they've lost some pieces up front, but I think they'll be good on the line, and now that you've got these two, one that can really stretch the field, one that doesn't have to, you've got a really good possession tight end in terms of catching the ball. I think they can be really good offensively,
And he was a second-round pick. I thought he was a first-round pick, which meant that he had the fifth-year option, but he's not. So it, being a second-round pick, he's going into a contract year.
Yeah, which is a big deal.
Yeah, I mean, these guys, you see how motivated they can get in a contract year.
You know who's the hardest job is going to fall on Dak's shoulders? To make sure everybody's happy. And that's a hard thing to do because there's only so many pass plays in a game. And you've got a guy like CeeDee Lamb, who I love the kid, but you know, he's a wide receiver. And when he's not involved early, sometimes I don't want to say checks out. That's not the right phrase, but sometimes he looks a little, you know, disengaged from what the offense is doing. Maybe I'll say it that way. So you've got to make sure you've got two guys now that need the ball. And a really good tight end, too. It's going to be on his shoulders to kind of figure it out and balance it.
Feel Good Friday on Boomer and Geo. Jerry in for Boomer. Let's get to the calls now, 888-808-1019. Let's go to Edgar, who's calling from Long Island. What's going on, Edgar?
Edgar.
Hey, good morning, guys. Hope you're doing well.
Morning.
Just two things to say real quick. Do you believe the Knicks can finally put together a full 48 minutes of good basketball tomorrow? Or either on game four, because to be honest, as much as people say the Celtics haven't shot their best or played their best, the Knicks haven't played their best basketball either, and they're up 2-0. They've just played pretty good in spurts.
You know what they haven't done yet, Edgar? They've had guys play good. Like, Mikal Bridges saved them offensively in the fourth quarter the other night. Karl Anthony Towns was good early. Jalen Brunson in games has been everything they've needed, whereas Brunson, while he made the big free throws and the big play at the end, shot 6 of 19. I agree with you. They have not put together a full game where they've complemented each other. They've done it in spurts, and I think you're right. While we're focused on Boston not shooting it well, I agree with you that the Knicks have not played a complete game yet either.
Absolutely. And last thing I'll say is I want to give a quick big shout out to my wife, who is an actor, and she was on the new episode of Law & Order yesterday.
Who was she in the show?
She was a medical advisor, I believe. Nice. Like, she was, you know, giving the case details to the detectives. You know, they were in Central Park. She was in there for 5 minutes or so.
That's awesome.
It's still pretty big, and I know bigger things are coming for her, so I'm very, very proud of
her. Good luck. That's great.
Yeah, that's awesome, Edgar, and that's something to be proud of. So she had lines. She had a speaking part.
Yeah, she did. She did.
Wow.
Very cool.
That is great. Well, good luck to her and her career, and good luck to you, and good luck to the Knicks on a Feel Good Friday. Everybody is fired up today.
That's pretty good.
Law & Order. You watched the episode last night?
You know, it's funny. So I used to, with Sam Waterston, I love Law & Order, but I haven't watched too many of them this season at all. But I did get, because I got home so late from from my son's baseball game. By the time I took a shower and ate, you know, ate something small, it was 8 o'clock, and I put it on. I'm like, you know, it's a new episode. I'm gonna watch it, and it was a very cool episode. If it's the same one we're talking about a basketball player's dad and him, whatever. So I did watch last night. So that's like ironic that he called this morning.
Do you remember I told you I made a bet with one of my buddies over at SNY?
Yeah.
Actually, I've been taking him to the cleaners here. He's a Sixers fan, Sean Gelman.
Oh, so last too year, easy, Sal.
Yeah, oh, dude.
The JV. Why lower your standards, buddy?
Last year, now I just can't wait for the Knicks to finish this off. But anyway, last year, you know, we went head-to-head Knicks-Sixers for a bottle of whatever choice.
Okay.
I ended up choosing Stateside, which is, you know, Stateside vodka, Surfside. I wanted, they had a special bottle that was made, I think in part with Spike. It had like Embiid's face on it.
Are you serious?
Called the year, because they were calling it the year. Last year was supposed to be the year that the Sixers finally got there.
Yeah, have you opened it, or you just keep it there as a little token?
No, I'm keeping it until the Knicks.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
And then but anyway, so I took that bottle from Sean. He was so adamant about the Celtics this year. I'm like, dude, you say the Sixers are out of it. What are you worried about? Celtics are going to crush the Knicks. You're getting too carried away with Brunson, blah, 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 blah. So I got the Knicks plus 2.5 games in the series. It's already over.
So now I get not already over.
My bet is already over. Knicks plus 2.5 games in the series, meaning that all they had to do is win 2 games.
You see what I'm saying?
The Celtics win 4 games. So I won that bet regardless of what happens with the Knicks.
Okay.
So now I got to pick a bottle. Now here's the real test. One of my other producers at SNY, Dave Mandel, huge Celtics fan.
Boy, these producers are degenerates, huh? They just can't get enough bets.
Maybe
they got to do some more work.
So huge Celtics fan, wants the bet. And I said before the series, I go, okay, 5 bottles. Like, usually it's a bottle to a bottle, whatever. So I go, it's your 5 bottles to my 1. That's the odds for the Knicks. I'm not betting you straight up.
No, like, there you go. Smart.
He didn't want to do it.
That's smart. I got it.
Today I get a text. If you still want to, and by the way, he was MIA yesterday. He didn't want to hear any text from the group. He was upset.
He's ducking.
Today he's like, okay, I'm ready to discuss. If you want to still make the bet, since it's even money now, the Knicks and Celtics basically even money to win the series, we do the bet. And? I don't know if I want to do that. That's why I'm asking you now advice. I don't want to.
Series is over. Do it. Knicks are going to win the series. Do it. Do it.
Oh!
I would even count
you're touching the money.
I would even count it with some more. I'd throw a little something on it, something else on it.
Like?
A jersey, money, dinner, I don't know, something. Rails, something. Jack it up, dude. Celtics are done.
I'm not worried about. I don't want to jinx it. Like, I'm not necessarily.
I don't believe in that nonsense. I don't.
But if I didn't do it before the series, and I was going to, but I just had to do it at fair odds, I wasn't going to do it even money.
No, that's smart, actually.
Yeah.
That's really smart. I don't believe in. Like, I remember when my son was real little, right? And I was always coaching him and for his one team, right? And Jen, this is when he's like 6'7", would film his at bats.
Yeah.
And like, you know, back then, everybody basically gets on base every single time. So he was always on base, right? When you're that age. And like the few times the year that he didn't get on base, Jen's like, oh, I jinxed him by recording. I don't believe that. Right. I don't believe
in that. I don't really
either,
but I don't want
nothing to me.
I want no part of pushing the envelope. Also, here's the truth.
So you do believe in it, by the way. By you saying that, you like, I know you try to get separation, but you're not. You're saying you don't believe in it, actions are saying that you do subscribe to that.
I think in the middle of a series, I just don't want to mess with it. Yeah, so maybe in live time and real action, I'm not messing with it. The real reason why I don't want to do it is because in my gut, I'm not there yet.
Well, then don't do it. That's your answer then.
Right. But it's not that I'm afraid to lose, and it's not that I don't think the Knicks are going to win. It's just, like, definitively last year, I felt like they were going to beat the Sixers. Definitively this year, I felt like it was going to be much closer than people thought, meaning the Knicks would win at least 2 games in the series. So it was easy for me to make those bets. I'm not definitive, even at this point, that the Knicks are still going to win the series. So I'm not worried about losing the bottle, necessarily. I'm more worried about A, I still don't trust it, and B, I don't want to have any bad karma touching any of that money like you just did right there.
Oh, well.
Yeah, you went all in touching that money.
Knicks. Yeah, Knicks are going to win. But Knicks, I'm not saying they're going to win the championship. Knicks are going to win this year. Knicks are going to be in the conference finals.
If they don't, you are.
People going to stone me in Times Square?
They might.
I mean, they already want to stone me because they don't think I gave the Knicks enough respect.
Yeah, not literally, but on social media, yes.
Yeah, I don't care about social. You know that. Although I probably won't log on for a couple days because it'll be tough. But, you know, to me, that's actually a good philosophy on your end. Like, how many times when you're betting
and you're in a cold patch. Like, I know I would do this once in a while. Like, you almost bet just to get action. You're like,
you
don't
really feel it.
I don't even know who's going to win this game. Sunday night, I want to put a couple of hundred down so it's more enjoyable. All right, let me lay the 3 points with the Saints, or let me lay the three with the Chargers, whatever. They do something dopey. When every football instinct tells you, and from a betting perspective, I don't really have a feel for this game, so you shouldn't
stay
touch
away.
It. Yeah. So if you're saying that you don't like it, not that you don't think that the Knicks can win or will, You're not fully sure, then don't touch the bet.
And I would have taken the 5-1 because I believe in just those odds. It's good value. All right,
yeah,
even if
good
you
value.
Lose, I'd rather the value. Right now, to me, it's a sucker's bet to do it at even money now, even though they're up 2-0, mm-hmm. because I'd rather have done it 5. I felt okay about the chances going in. I feel the same way I did going in as I do now up 2-0. I still don't feel like it's definitively over. So I don't want to take it at even money. I'd rather the 5 bottles to the 1 bottle.
I understand. Hey, Hoff, can you do us a favor? Can you find out what the series prices are? Not so much Nixon sweep, although I'd be curious, but Nixon 5. I'm curious what you get back for that return Nixon 5 at this point.
Is that what you would predict?
No, I'm just saying because when you were out, I did this. Me and Zoo looked it up, right?
Right.
So before the start of the Celtics series, for the Knicks to sweep, I want to say...
Good God.
I know. I mean, no one's... Right. Well, you might.
Yeah.
They were plus 3,400. And I remember saying on the air, I'm like, all right, that's a waste of money. But for 100 bucks, you lay down 100. They somehow sweep. Somebody gets hurt. You win 3,400 bucks. Whatever. You could justify it. But the one that jumped out to me, because I didn't think that they would win a game 7 in Boston necessarily.
Okay.
I'm like, all right, if the Knicks could win, maybe Knicks in 6. That's like the one thing that I looked at from a realistic and then also a value perspective. And I believe then Knicks in 6, they were plus, I want to say about plus 9. Plus 900.
Right. That's a great value. Okay.
I want to see what it is now. That's
so,
the point.
So now... Think about this. See, that's why I feel like the Knicks almost do need to sweep this series to really put them away. Because think of how it plays out. Let's say they don't and they lose game 3. Now, all of a sudden, you're talking about best case scenario, you're going to be up 3-1 going back to Boston. Boston really going to lose all 3 of their home games to date. Then you could be looking at 3-2, pressure back on the Knicks. Because if they don't win a game 6, then you're going to have to go back there for game 7. That's why these series...
But you've proven you can win there. So yeah, that seems much less daunting than it did before
I know, but
I don't think they win a game 7 there.
But game 1 and games 2, different than a game 7.
I think it'd be worse. Also, because think about the pressure the Celtics would feel game 7 in their crib.
Yeah, but not if they come back from down 0-2.
Yeah, I get that part. That would change the feel.
So
if the
Knicks don't sweep... Best case, now, if they don't sweep and it's 2-2 going back to Boston, we're screwed.
Well, don't say that.
I mean, come on.
Don't say
we're
screwed.
You got to be realistic. If they lose both games at home here, they're in trouble. They have to win one of these next 2 games. But even if, let's say they lose 1, win 1, up 3-1 going to Boston.
Yep.
The math is still easy for Boston to be able to justify winning the series. Okay, we're at home. We haven't won a home game yet. Win that. Then, okay, you have to go to the Garden and win a game 6, sure, but Knicks haven't been great at home. It's just 1 game, and if you win that 1 game, now you're back in your building for game 7. So that's why these series are, to me, they're tough, and I think the Knicks' best chance to win this series might be, in fact, to sweep, or at the very least, go up 3-0.
Can you imagine? Listen, if I'm sitting there and I'm betting for a living, right?
Yeah.
No emotional stake with the Celtics or the Knicks. The play right now is to bet the Celtics, because the odds that you got...
Right.
Before the start of the series, were so astronomically favorable to the Knicks because nobody thought they could do it.
Right.
And you'd have to lay so much money and so much juice because everybody thought the Celtics would win. But now, especially if you say like Celtics and six, I'm not saying the Celtics will win in
right.
6, but if you find that bet, which is a little different than Celtics in 7, I think right now Hoff said their Knicks are plus 155 to win in 5.
The Knicks are?
Yeah. What would the Celtics be in 6? I mean... It'd have to be about 350, something like that.
Right.
You got to win 4 straight games.
You're right. The value now is with the Celtics. But even with that, they were talking
about... I would never touch that. I'm
like
just
minus
saying.
Minus 105, whatever it is.
Correct.
Almost even money, which...
I think they were minus 1,000. They were minus 1,000
right.
to win the series.
At one point.
Meaning you got to lay $1,000 to win 100.
So now, if the Celtics were plus money, like I heard a caller, I think it was Boomer and Geo talking about it, and a caller was like, I would consider taking... The Celtics at this point, because that is the right...
Is he a Knick fan who called it?
Yeah, he said he's not going to do it, but if the Celtics were plus money, that is the better value play, and you get the emotional hedge going.
No, I can't emotional hedge here.
But the value play, you just said it, would have been the Celtics, because you're getting them, all right, yeah, they're down 0-2, but
correct.
They could still win this series very easily, and you're getting a value... A
that you couldn't
value.
Get 5
yeah,
days ago.
That's exactly right. Dennis is in Mount Arlington. What's up, Dennis?
Hey, what's up, Sal and BT? How you doing?
How are you, Dennis?
Hey, Bob.
I'm doing okay. I miss you on the overnight still on my drive-in, Sal, but I love BT.
Sorry.
I love
Big Mac. I got a question, and I think I know what you're going to say as an answer, but I want to kick it off you guys. I think you can agree that we're on the verge of a pretty big upset, very big upset. Let's say the Knicks come and they wind up sweeping the Celtics. Mm-hmm. The 61-21 Celtics, the world champion Celtics. Is it a bigger upset than the Red Sox coming back 3-0? The Boston, New York thing. You got to look at it. Not right now, but before the series started. Right now, you know what? We can upset them, and we can win. We can sweep. But if you looked at it before the series started, there was no way in heck. Yeah, we were going to sweep these guys.
Well, but Dennis, the thing that's missing, and it's a fascinating question, and there's no right or wrong answer. I don't know. But the historical element of, you know, the curse and the Red Sox plight, that just magnified at times in millions. I don't think anything's comparing to that.
And the Yankees.
Yeah.
You're talking about the dynasty and Yankees Stadium and their history and all that. To me, now, again, you're talking about not just going into the series. You're talking about coming back from down 0-3. I'm with you, BT. I don't think anything can beat that, as far as I'm concerned.
I wish something would, so I could get it off the top of our resume. It's like the one thing on the resume I don't really like.
Yeah, I mean, but that's a bad one. Yeah. I'm trying to think of the other ones, and I think Evan had this discussion on their show, Evan and Tiki, with
the Giants and the Super Bowl, right? The Pats.
The first one, to me, I was at that Super Bowl. I couldn't believe what my eyes saw, but that was a singular game.
Mm-hmm.
And it's much easier to have an upset in a singular game than it is over the course of a best of seven. I don't think anything is as shocking as the down 0-3 Red Sox. Down 0-3 in general in baseball, especially back then, was a huge deal. It never happened. But Red Sox and all they've been through versus the Yankees and all they've been through, I don't think anything would come close to that.
Well, because it's so hard to do the baseball versus football versus basketball. I would say, let's just put, just for a moment, put the Knicks at the end of the finish line just to engage. Let's say they win the championship this year. Right? I'm just really pushing this forward. Like, in my mind, I was, all right, how would that relate to some of the other, quote-unquote, surprise championships in New York sports lore? Well, number one is the 69 Mets. I mean, you got to start with that. Nobody saw that coming. You got to throw Eli in there. We just touched on that, beating the big, bad, amazing Patriots. And those are the first two. I mean, the Yankees in 96.
Oh, Jets Super Bowl III.
Yeah. That's right. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I mean, it's not our lifetime, but
they were massive dogs going against shoeless Colts, of course, but the Knicks won 50 games last year. They added an all-star center. They brought in a guy who's averaged 18, 19. Like, it's not like this is the little teeny tiny engine that could and somehow is squeezing out. Now, I don't know how they're winning this way, but the fact that they are winning might be stunning now because of how they played poorly against the best teams. But if you told me at the start of the season, hey, and without telling me how they got with a 20-point deficit, hey, the Knicks are going to be up 2-0 on the Celtics in the Eastern Conference semis, I'd say, all right,
I'm with
you. Wouldn't be stunned.
This should not be that big of a shock that the Knicks are competing against the Celtics. We're learning about the Knicks this year. Now, a shock in that the way that the first two games have gone, sure, down big, come back, win both times on the road. And to the caller's point, if it were to be a sweep, forget about the championship, if they were to sweep the Celtics, I think that would be a shock. But remember, expectation coming into the year was a championship team. Also, in the regular season, for all the knocks against them, they had the fifth best record in the league. So it's not like they're coming at it. I'll give you an example with the Knicks. The Knicks has the 8th seed against the Heat in, what was it, 98, whatever it was. No, it was 99, right? The shortest
against,
season year.
Against 1-8, that was 99. Season.
Yeah, right, 99, the year they go to the finals. Yep. That 8th seed knocking out a 1 seed. Now, again, I know the Knicks, but still, I mean, that was more of an upset almost than this.
Yeah, but we all knew the Knicks weren't an 8th seed.
I understand.
They were, but they weren't.
But I understand that, but still, and then going on that run afterward, that game, and then going on the run and getting to the finals, I mean, still, to me, this should not be that shocking from where the Knicks were going into the season, where they've been the last few years, and also where they ended even in the regular season with their overall record.
I'd like to remind everybody what the NBA preseason odds were, just to validate what Sal and I just said here. The Boston Celtics had the shortest odds to win the championship at plus 300. The Knicks were number two. In front of Denver, in front of Minnesota, in front of OKC, in front of everybody, in front of the Cavs, plus 725. The Knicks had the second highest win-loss over total. And of all the other teams, let me see, of some of the top teams, now the Knicks were obviously under it. The Knicks over-under was 53.5. They won 51 times. Celtics went over. Denver went under. Minnesota went under. OKC over. Matter of fact, a lot of the better teams, under Mavericks, under Bucks, under Sixers. Where are the Cavs? I just want to see the Cavs before we keep moving. Cavs were way over. They were 48.5. They won 64 times.
What was
times.
The Knicks total again?
The Knicks total was 53.5 coming in. They went 51-31. Right. So a little, betting underachievement there. But again, just to reinforce the notion that supposed to kind of be in this position, they had the second shortest title odds.
Right. Connor is in Hicksville. What's up, Connor?
What's going on, BT? Hey, Sal, nice to meet you. I haven't met you yet.
What's up, Connor? How are you?
I'm good, man. Listen, I was talking to my buddy RMC this morning, and there's two things we think are going on with the Knicks right now. One, that Detroit series, we gave them a lot of hate. They're playing a lot tougher basketball. That series definitely made us a lot tougher, more resilient. Two, I was on here a couple weeks ago saying that Bridges was the ugly stepchild, and I think he might be a listener of your show because he is absolutely showing out. That's great news. All right? And listen, we're playing hungry dog runs faster. We're playing good underdog basketball right now. No expectations going into this series, and these guys are rising up. The offense looks a lot better, and we're closing out games, man. It's not Brunson.
I don't know that the offense looks much better. I mean, they're shooting 42% every night overall.
No, but it is, to Connor's point, it is not just Brunson, the Brunson show, ISO Brunson. It's much more than that.
Yeah, but it wasn't
basketball is a game of runs, We're making the runs at the right time.
Mm-hmm. Oh, there's no question. All I'm saying, Connor, is I don't even, and thanks for the call, buddy, I don't even think it was the Brunson show during the regular season. Carl Anthony Towns averaged almost 25 points a game.
Right. I get it.
It did get stagnant at points in the Pistons series. I agree with that. But, the Knicks got a lot of weapons. I think it took them a while to learn how to use them. They're still vulnerable because Cat's not a great defender. Neither is Brunson. You saw a lot of times Brunson was in the post last night by design. They went right at him from the outset. Jrue Holiday in the post. And there's things that they can exploit with the Knicks here. But what is no longer debatable, which, quite frankly, I was wrong on, I didn't think this team had heart like this. I'm not saying that they were complete wusses, but I just did not think they had the ticker that you need to win a championship, and I think that they do.
Two things Connor touched on there. Number one, which I thought was odd, maybe the first call I've ever taken that said, nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you. Well, what that means. Yeah, nice to meet you, Sal.
I'm just saying I'd never taken a call like that, but we're technically not like meeting,
yeah,
I guess.
Gotcha.
But anyway, so that was number one that stood out. Number two that stood out was he was saying the Knicks are playing with no expectation, free and easy. Not anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Now the expectations have changed. And I don't know if I fully believe that anyway, because there's always an expectation when a team comes into the year, like you just mentioned with the odds. But going up against the Celtics, maybe many people expected the Celtics to win. Still, the expectation was, hey, you got to show us what you're made of here. This is a chance to really show where you're at as a franchise in comparison to the champion head-to-head once and for all. Let's see it. But now, up 2-0, returning home, there's a massive expectation. I think the expectation by most now is that the Knicks got to win this series.
Yes.
And that is something completely different, regardless of what side you were on going in. The expectation now definitively is they have to win this series.
If the Knicks don't win the series, then the things that I said about Tom Thibodeau and, to a lesser extent, Bridges and Cat could still very well much be in play to that point. You have to win it. You have to finish the job now.
So the New York Knicks went up to Boston and won back-to-back games in their building. Now, Tiki and I talked about this a lot yesterday, that home court advantage is dead in the NBA. And really in sports, it's gone this way. I'm putting my hand towards the ground like it's crashing. Because it just doesn't matter as much. And there's research and data to back this up. Like, not that long ago, if you go back into the annals of NBA history, the winning percentage of home teams was closer to about 60%.
Mm-hmm.
This season, that number was 52%. So, not that much above 500.
No, I mean, let's just look at the Knicks. They keep winning on the road.
Yeah. So, we already know that home, road, the split isn't the way it used to be. But with the Knicks being up 2-0, you would think, well, the pressure's on the Boston Celtics. They can't go down 0-3. No team in NBA history has come back successfully from being down 3-0. We've seen teams force a seventh game, like the Celtics a few years ago.
Yep.
But no one's ever come back. Here is Shaquille O'Neal last night on TNT explaining why the pressure is actually on the Knicks and not the Celtics.
Now for the Knicks. don't get comfortable. It's a must-win for Boston, but it's also a must-win for Knicks. If you want to put serious pressure on the champs, game three is a must for the Knicks.
30-17 in the fourth quarter. So
let me take that for a second. He is 100% correct.
Now, that's Charles Barkley. Mm. Charles Barkley expounded on that with experience. Here's Charles Barkley explaining his experience of being up 2-0 after winning 2 on the road, or vice versa, losing the first two games at home. Here's more from Charles Barkley.
I've been in this situation twice. We played the Lakers when we were the number one seed in the West. We lost the first two games at home.
In a five-game series.
In a five-game series. Mm. And I remember telling the guys, I said, guys, all we got to do is get the first one. But then the pressure switches back to them.
But don't let us win one.
But you got to win the third one.
Yeah.
Because then the pressure switches. But also with Kenny, when we won the first two games in Houston, I remember telling the guys, we cannot go back to Houston 2-2. We cannot go back to Houston 2-2. I said, we got to win game three. And in both of those instances, so what Shaq said, game three is a must-win. It's going to sound stupid. Game three is a must-win for the Knicks. Because if they get back, because game four, because Boston's got a better team. They've been up 20, but I'm telling you, been in that situation twice. You got to win that third game. I still thought we were going to win the series when we were up, but when we lost game three. But it actually flips the mental picture.
What do you think of that?
I mean, he's right. I mean, it tells you how important game three is. Five-game series, it absolutely.
Well, that's a different animal, yes.
But a seven-game series, I think it's always been game three. Because whether it's 1-1 or 2-0, like, when you get to game three, it becomes whoever. That creates the biggest momentum for the rest of the series. And so if it's 1-1, you go up 2-1, all of a sudden, you just got to win two more games. Right? If you're up 3-0, we all know that you've won, basically.
Well,
historically.
historically,
you've won.
It's so over, right.
Game three is absolutely pivotal. But the pressure's on both of them. I know what they're trying to do, and then this is maybe just as part of the coalition, that whole crew of Knick haters.
If they are in the coalition, yeah. I'm not aware of it.
Which I'm sure they are, even if they're just, I don't know, groupie members of
they
it.
They definitely are.
Well, Chuck is, definitely.
And Shaq.
Then, the pressure's also on Boston, because Boston's coming to the Garden, and if they go down 0-3, it's like it's over.
You're 100% right. Now, I'm speaking as a fan, obviously. Right. I haven't played in the league the way Chuck has, but I know how I view this as a fan. I have been a fan of a team that splits on the road, wins two games at home, is down 0-2. Like, I've experienced it all. And the reality is, every freaking game, it feels like the world is on the line. Every single one of them. Because you don't want to allow a team that's nearing death to get back into it.
Right.
And I've got a million examples as a sports fan where that happened. Like, the Nets were up 2-0 on the Bucks in 21, and they blew them out in the first two games. It wasn't even close. And game three was a close game, and I was sitting there sweating my ass off. And my wife's like, well, you're up 2-0. I said, you cannot let them back in this series. And they blew an opportunity to go up 3-0. You think I'm alone on that? Hello, Knick fans. Hi, Knicks. Let's get back to you guys. Last year, you're up 2-0 in the first two games at home against the Pacers.
But that was different.
Game three was right in front of them.
We know it was different because they were playing very compromised.
No, this is before they were compromised. I'm talking about game three.
But they were compromised going into it.
But they were still the team that beat Philadelphia.
Of course.
Losing game three, much like the Rangers a few years earlier in the Eastern Conference Finals against Tampa, that turned into the end game.
Yeah, I think Tampa.
So it always works. Every game is that way.
I think Tampa's the better comparison.
Rangers-Lightning?
Yeah, Rangers-Lightning, because Tampa was the better team.
Sure.
And so just like the Celtics, theoretically, at least regular season, they're the better team.
Right.
And so when you have an edge on the better team, you have to keep it. You can't give them any momentum back. And it's different. And like, we talk about this all the time in football. Oh, that drive changed the momentum of the game. You hear it all the time. But that's in a game. Anything can happen in a game, as we've seen twice already in this Knicks-Celtics series. But if in basketball, it feels different to say that, because it's just one game out of five that are remaining, but I still think this is a lot of pressure on the Celtics, especially because the narrative, the expectation about them as defending champions has always been,
all season long, even though they sat second fiddle to the Cavaliers for most of the season, was they are the favorite to win the championship again. And if they go down 0-3, as in this game matters the most to it, to that point, how are they still the favorite? They're not. They've all of a sudden grossly underperformed the expectation, and probably their expectation.
Yeah, right now, if you go to your sports book, if you will, my of choice is FanDuel, the Knicks and Celtics are basically even money. Like, despite the Knicks being two wins away and Boston being four wins away,
right,
despite the fact that the Knicks potentially would have three of the next five games at Madison Square Garden, Vegas or the sports books, mm-hmm, or however you want to define it, are still giving the Celtics the ultimate respect,
right,
that this series is not over. And that's sort of happening, not as extreme, in the Indiana series.
They're the favorite in Game 3, too, right?
They are the favorite in Game 3. Not as big of a favorite as they were in Game 2.
But they're the favorite in Game 3, and
yes,
they're still the favorite for the series.
Very slight. It's basically even money.
But still.
For the series, yes.
But still, they're down 2-0.
No, I know.
2-0, I should say.
They're not only down 0-2, they lost the first two games in their own building. Again, we talked about this yesterday because we were prepared for it. Yeah. It's only come back five times.
Right.
Like, it's a rarity
to
come back.
But it's really hard to ignore, even as the staunchest Knick optimist, that they were down 20 in both of these games.
Right.
That, like, they were significantly better than you for two and a half quarters of both of these games. But a quarter and a half did them in.
No.
Twice.
Certainly did. Let's get back to your calls. Jack is calling from Secaucus. Good afternoon, Jack.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on the show. Just want to keep it quick here. We got dudes, we got dogs, and we are doing damage.
It
is time to put some respect on these Knicks. And I'm telling you what, I don't want to hear anything about last year. No more Devo. No more iHeart. This is the team to do the job. So everyone buy in. Let's go, Knicks. Here we go. Thank you, guys.
They're dudes.
Thank you. They are a better team.
Tom, dogs.
Did you have him come in called just to read your script?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
That's my cousin, Frankie.
Just making sure.
I don't know what name he used, but I said, yo, Frank, we need you real quick.
John is calling from Flushing. Hey, John.
What up, John?
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Good.
I just want to make 3 points. Number one, I don't want to hear Tibbs anymore about the minutes his players. He prepared his players to play in these playoff games. They're the fittest team in the NBA. They don't get tired while other guys wear down.
Right.
Do you guys agree with that?
No, absolutely.
Yes and no. I think that you're right in terms of it prepares guys for the bigger minutes. You said that a lot. You said that last year, and I can't argue with you, but I don't think that exonerates every mistake that we may have disagreed with from the regular season where we said, hey, you're up by 20, there's 3 minutes to go, maybe I'd get OG out of the game. Yeah. Like, I can't blanketly, or just use a blanket statement to say everything Tibbs did during the regular season was right, and we were wrong to criticize.
Well, I think it's,
I can't do that.
I think it's kind of a philosophy. I'll give you a soccer example, even though you guys don't want to hear it. So Arne Slot, who is the new manager of Liverpool, was asked about how, like, they won the Premier League with four matches to go. So, I mean, it's over already. They still have to play three more, and they've already won. And someone asked him, like, what did you do differently than Jurgen Klopp last year, who was iconic Liverpool manager? He said, I didn't do anything. Only thing I did was make sure that my guys were so physically fit, because they play a game every 3 days, right, that they were going to be available. And the biggest difference between Liverpool and Arsenal is that Arsenal, who is in second right now, even though they may cede that and give it to Man City, is Arsenal got hurt. Like, all their players were hurt, whereas Liverpool was healthy for most of the season. And it's a little thing, but being the best condition is an old school, like, we're going to grind, we're not going to drink water, we're going to, you know, push ourselves to the limits, so when you get into an actual match, it feels easy. And so I think that's what Tibbs, that's how he thinks, right? That's how his philosophy has always been, and it will always be that way. The problem sometimes for athletes is that they don't know how to do that, right? They're not used to it, especially in basketball, where they're used to getting rest days or, you know, not playing 40-plus minutes in a game the whole season long. And so it takes time, right? And over the last couple of years, I think a lot of these guys have gotten conditioned to what Tibbs is asking them to do. And it's benefiting them right now in the postseason.
I can't argue that. I think there's a lot of benefits to that. It doesn't take away that there may have been times during the regular season where guys were playing in situations where they shouldn't play.
Of course. And by the way, the players knew it. And they said it.
Yep, Mikal Bridges did say it.
Absolutely.
The Tom Thibodeau minutes discussion is not black or white. Because sometimes people try to make it that way.
Yeah.
Like, he abuses his players too many minutes, or, oh, shut up, he's amazing. Like, both things can be true. And what we've tried to do, and I think we've done it when talking about this, is there are cases in which I say, hey, I disagree with this. Yeah. And then there are cases where I'm like, no, this is great. Or your point of, this gets these guys ready for May basketball even more because they're so well conditioned. Let's go to Angel in Seattle, Washington. How are you, Angel?
Hey, what's up, my redheaded stepbrother right there. I love you, man. Tiki, you're awesome.
Thank you.
Generational man. Talent. Sean Marash, salutations. But I wanted to get to the turning point that I don't think a lot of people are really acknowledging this. They said, Mikhail, it's your time. Mm. We've seen Pat have games. We've seen Brunson have games. We've seen Deuce McBride have games. We've seen the OG game. They said, Mikhail, it's time for you to figure it out. Brunson comes back in with like 7 minutes left in the fourth, right? My cousin texts me back in Jersey. He goes, am I tripping? Or has Brunson not hit the court? And I said, they're trying something new, man. We're down 20. Bridges, you got to get your head out of you. You know what? And it's time for you to figure it out. And that's exactly what they did. And I think that that's where the turning point was. You see Brunson come back in, motion for people to get out the way, and say, Bridges, go ahead. And that's the unique thing that's about this team that was built this way. Because any given night, one of these guys can have a game.
Yes.
And it's been a head-scratcher all year because we're expecting them to all have a game at the same time. It's not how it's going to work. Brunson Brunson doesn't facilitate the rock like Steve Nash. So he's going to do what he's going to do when it comes to scoring. Cat's a big man. He's down low. Mikhail, your turn. Have at it. Have a day, kid. Love it. Appreciate you guys. Love y'all. Listen every day out here in Seattle. Tommy, you're a generational talent. Keep up the good work. Tiki, legend. Evan, love you. Mirage, I'm out.
What was that about? I don't think he likes you.
Oh, man, Sean.
I don't know what to say about that. He didn't say, like, drop dead or anything.
He kind of dropped. I think he dumped himself.
Is he say something else? I do think our last caller is right about a bunch of things that he said. Like, OG Anunoby did not have a big offensive game in game two. Mikal Bridges in the fourth quarter stepped up for him.
Right.
And OG still supplied his incredible wing defense.
Well, that's the beauty of having two-way players like that.
Absolutely. And you don't need everyone to have big nights at the same time. For the record, Jalen Brunson sits the beginning of fourth quarters. This is something Tom Thibodeau did a bunch of times. Mm-hmm. He went back to Brunson at the 6:39 mark of the fourth quarter.
Yep.
The Knicks were down by 12. So they made their move in terms of, okay, they're not down by 20. They're not down by 18,
right?
But it was still a 12-point game when Jalen took the floor and then the move occurred.
When we talk about the minutes stuff with Tibbs, this is what I think a lot of people were getting at. Okay, you're in a game, whether you're winning or losing, and you don't need to play these guys extra minutes. Give Deuce that time.
See, Deuce was a big part of the comeback, especially in the third quarter, man.
Huge part of that comeback. He only had, two baskets or something? Whatever it was. I think he had 5 points in the game, but it was critical for them to give Jalen Brunson some rest, but also we're down 20. Let's see what happens. And those guys got it down to 8. I mean, got it down to 12. They cut plus eight off of the deficit.
Well, to your point about Deuce scored 5 points in this game, and that's why sometimes, and especially Bridges is a great example of this. It's not the quantity of points. Mm-hmm. It's the timeliness of the points.
Right.
So Mikal Bridges, if you just look at the box score, 14.6 for 18 from the field. Yeah, all of them were in the fourth quarter.
Right.
Well, let's get to Deuce McBride because you...
Right, he was cooking guys.
He was cooking guys. He was doing it all over the place.
Right.
You mentioned Deuce McBride only scored 5 points. He scored those 5 points in the immediacy of the Knicks being down by 20 with 2 minutes to go in the third quarter. Deuce layup, Josh Hart three, Deuce three. 8-0 run, it's down to 12 when they were down by 20 with 2 minutes to go.
Right.
Those are Deuce's 5 points.
Right.
So you got to admit, those are some pretty big points.
Of course. Now, look, it helped that the Celtics were just bafflingly stupid on some of their possessions. I mean, one, we were just watching the replay of it. I mean, they came down and took a shot with 18 seconds left.
Yeah.
They're up by 14. They're taking shots with 18 seconds left on the clock. Now, I'm not saying you need to be over analytical and have your sheet of paper and your chart and calling up, hey, what's the analytics on this? But ultimately, that becomes a possession thing, right? How many possessions are the Knicks going to successfully convert to get this thing even close? Just take time away from them. That's the one thing the Celtics haven't done in game one and two. So if you're Joe Mazzulla, that's what you need to focus on, not what your players are doing, not that they're missing, three pointers, but
instruct them differently when you have these big leads, because we've seen it two games in a row.
Twice.
Jacked up, jacking up, chucking shots that have no chance and giving the Knicks an opportunity. Just don't give them the opportunity and you have a better chance of winning.
It doesn't matter whether it's a Celtic choke or it's OG and Mikal being worth every freaking dime. Those are fun debates, but at the end of the day, here's the only thing that matters. 2-0.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Right.
2-0 in a series in which every single person not named Tommy Lugauer, that's right, I'll defend your honor, I'll put you over, every single person besides Tommy Lugauer didn't think they had a shot in.
Well,
and now it's 2-0 orange and blue.
Well, it's impossible to have gone into this series saying the Knicks are the better team. It's impossible. Now, you could say circumstances will lead the Knicks to win a game or two in this series, hence why I said the Celtics in six.
You still have a chance at that, by the way.
I mean, good. You never know. But there is not a reasonable, I don't care if you're an Uber fan or, probably if you're an Uber fan of the Knicks, you're blind, you don't care, you look through it, you say no matter what, the Knicks are going to win this series because I believe in whatever, right? But any independent basketball observer, any IBO, any fan of any other team looks at this series and says the Boston Celtics are the superior team. They are the defending champs, and they're basically the same team. They are going to win this series, even if it gets ugly at points.
Mm-hmm.
And so we can reshape our mindset and our history now that they're up 2-0, but nobody coming into this series was saying the Knicks are going to win this, and they have a great chance of going to the Eastern Conference Finals.
So I apologize, Tommy. Tiki Barber gives you no respect for your Knicks and Sixers.
I give you Uber fan respect, right? Because that's what the Uber fan does. You believe against all odds that you have a chance. And congratulations, Tommy. You're halfway right.
Thank you. I also guaranteed it, so I put my reputation for whatever that's worth on the line. Can I make a show decision here?
Go ahead.
After my Knicks are up 2-0?
You already want to make show decisions?
I sure do.
All right.
Going forward,
yes,
we will not refer to them as the Boston Celtics. They will be known on this show going forward as the Boston Chuckers. You cannot refer to them as the Celtics. They are the Boston Chuckers. Keep chucking, Boston. See where that gets you.
Well, I mean, it fits.
It fits. Who knows if they start falling at Madison Square Garden, it may go somewhere else. But don't worry about that yet. What matters right now is what the Knicks have accomplished over the last 72 hours is historic. No team has ever pulled off back-to-back 20-plus point road comebacks. No one's done it. And the Knicks just did it in back-to-back games in Boston. And they did it for a myriad of reasons. They did it because Jalen Brunson was king in the final few minutes.
Mm-hmm.
They did it because Mikal Bridges locked down defensively and also woke up offensively, making his first field goal in the fourth quarter of this game. And they won it because, I can't believe I'm saying this, Tom Thibodeau outcoached Joe Mazzulla. And they did it because the New York Knicks, despite all the talk this season that it's not the same as last year, they don't have the same heart as last year, they don't have the same chemistry as last year, clearly we were wrong about that.
Yeah.
I mean, anyone who said that, and it's okay to be wrong because, like I always say, you'd rather be happy and wrong than right and miserable. But this team has shown us over these two games, and really you can go back to game six against Detroit as well and kind of rope that in here, that they do have that heart.
Right.
And the difference between last year's Knicks and this year's Knicks is while they have the same heart, they got a lot more talent.
Well, they're dudes.
They also have health, and I think most importantly, they have Mitchell Robinson. And when you look at the plus minus, this stupid stat, plus minus, what does that even mean? Like, is it relative? You know, when is he on the court versus when is he not? Who's he on the court against? But you look at the plus minuses in this game, and his is ridiculously high relative to everybody on both sides of the court, offense and defense, for the Boston Celtics and for the New York Nets at plus 19. I heard this earlier today, and it's so right. Mitchell Robinson, for as bad as a free throw shooter as he is, as average of a scorer as he is, this dude is the identity of what the Knicks needed. And we talked a little bit about this yesterday. You need someone to wash the glass. You need someone to just be a presence. This dude is that. Now, did he help catalyze other guys? Did Karl Anthony Towns crash the boards in a more aggressive way because of all the talk about the bigs? Maybe. But Mitchell Robinson was the reason that this Knicks team feels like they actually have a chance in this series.
Mitchell Robinson has been such a difference. I remember when the Knicks were losing these regular season games to better teams, mm-hmm. one of the talk from few Knicks fans was, hey, when Mitch is back, it'll be different. And I thought for a while it was over the top. Yeah, they'd be better with Mitch back, but how much better can they truly be? This series has shown you what difference it can be. And here's the other thing it showed you. It showed you the respect that Joe Mazzulla has for Mitchell Robinson. So yesterday on the program, I'd say around 4 o'clock, you could always go back to the Evan and Tiki podcast, we did a deep dive on Hack-a Mitch.
Mm-hmm.
And what we discovered when you go through the deep dive is they were not hacking Mitchell Robinson to send him to the free throw line.
Right. This wasn't a points thing.
No. It actually, the more you think about it, had nothing to do with points. It had nothing to do with free throw shooting. It had everything to do with Joe Mazzulla making a decision, which is, I want him out of the game.
Right.
And so what we saw middle fourth quarter, actually it was late fourth quarter, we saw the Celtics intentionally fouling Mitchell Robinson.
Yeah.
Remember this?
Yeah, absolutely we did.
The Knicks were not in the bonus, but they were giving fouls away anyway. Why were they doing that? Because Joe Mazzulla was telling Tom Thibodeau, I can't deal with the double big lineup. Please take him out of the game. And Tom Thibodeau obliged. He took him out of the game and all the while picked up two extra personal fouls. Hello, how'd the game end? With the Celtics not having a foul to give.
Right.
And Jalen Brunson hitting free throws.
That's a good
and
point.
And the Knicks had a confidence, and Thibodeau had a confidence of, you know what? I'll give you what you want. I'll take Mitch out of this game. That's fine. We'll beat you a different way. And then, oh, by the way, final few possessions, we'll switch him in for defense when you can't even do this anyway.
Yeah, and you're screwed. So it's interesting, though, that we talk about this in regards of how Joe Mazzulla is trying to get Mitch out of the game. But think about if you're a Boston Celtic player right now.
Yes.
And your coach's philosophy is, that guy's too good for us. We got to get him out of the game. Think about how emasculating that is. I'm serious to your team. Mitchell Robinson, who's not, he's not an all-star. He barely has played the last couple of years. And you're going into the second round of the NBA playoffs saying, that guy scares us, man.
Yeah.
We got to get him out of the game.
We got to get him out,
Dude, you got to feel like a little bitch from your coach telling you. I mean, seriously, think about that. Because I know this from being a professional athlete. It doesn't matter how much bigger, stronger, fat, whatever the opponent is, you believe you can beat him. Give me a shot, I bet I can take him on. If he kicks your butt, doesn't matter. Give me a shot, I can take him on. They are making their own team, talking about the Celtics now, making their own team feel like they're not good enough against the guy who has barely played in the NBA in the last couple of years. That is, when I really think about it, it's an embarrassing basketball like mindset. Just go beat them.
But guess what?
You're better than them. Go beat them. I'm talking from a Celtics standpoint.
Yeah, absolutely.
And what you're getting told is, like, yeah, we're better, but that guy, I'm scared of him. Like, that, how weak is that?
Let's go to the final possession of the game. Jalen Brunson makes the two free throws, which no one had any doubt he was going to make.
King of New York.
Well, clearly the King of New York. I don't even think it's worth talking about anymore. Right.
Oh, it's always worth talking about.
The King of New York.
Nah, you got to dunk the football. Slam dunk the basketball.
Okay, fair enough.
Did Judge go yard yesterday?
Did who go yard?
Judge.
Who cares?
No, the real King of New York, Trent Grisham.
Right, that's right.
2 days ago he did.
So Jalen Brunson steps up to the free throw line down by a point in the closing seconds of this game. Not easy to make those free throws, by the way. And he makes both of them without an issue. Joe Mazzulla says, I'm not going to use a timeout. By the way, you want to know why he chose not to use a timeout? Similar to the Mitchell Robinson thing. He didn't want to allow Deuce McBride to come back into this game.
Yeah.
That's why he did. At least my opinion.
Yep.
He was like, I know what Thibs is going to do if I call a timeout. He's going to substitute him in. Right. So instead, they play it through.
Yeah, and the problem is by playing it through, anybody watching that game, anybody in the TD Garden, anybody who knows anything about basketball or the Celtics knew exactly what was going to happen.
Yes.
They almost made it easy for the Knicks.
And who, and this is that, let's not take a shot at Mikal because Mikal put the finishing touches on it.
Right.
Who started that awesome defensive stand against Jason Tatum?
That would be the one thing I do know about basketball. When a guy's coming up the court, cut off the lane.
Mm.
And that's exactly what Mitch did.
Mitchell, Big Mitch
shut
Robinson.
Down.
And so when you go back to don't be a little bitch,
right.
Joe Mazzulla knew the impact Mitch was having defensively. And on that final possession, and think about the position that Jason Tatum was in, who's been god-awful in this series, and he is the ire of chance when the Celtics come to the Garden. I got a few ideas. We'll get to that later. Jason Tatum got caught in the Bermuda Triangle of Nick Dogness. Mitchell Robinson.
I like that.
OG Anunoby. And yes, I got nothing but respect for Mikal Bridges, who put the final touches on it. The ball is in the hands of Jason Tatum, an NBA champion, in his own building, down by a point. And the Nick defense stifled him so badly, he didn't get a shot off.
Mm-hmm.
And that all adds up to, in my opinion, one of the most stunning 45 minutes you'll ever see, from down 20 again to being up 2-0.
Yeah, the most clutch player in this series is still Jalen Brown.
And it's not particularly close.
Right.